Good afternoon, good lunchtime to those of you who are taking a break from work, maybe. It is roughly noon here in Seattle, Washington on September the 17th, 2019. And yes, we have various sundry topics to discuss. No, we won't be reviewing various ways to either feed on the carcasses of French bulldogs or your feline friend, the cat. We are living in strange times, people. We are living in very strange times. We are living in a time of fraction and fracture and fricassee and fractious environments of groups and clans and cliques and cadres and various cabals. Do you really know the source of your pain? Do you know who's causing you distress in the night? Do you know what's going on out there? When the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin talks about issuing a 100-year bond, a 100-year treasury bond, that's a bond, that's a financial instrument that matures in 100 years. Yes, when our good friend Mnuchin talks about a 100-year bond, I feel like he's stealing my ideas. Of course, in 2016, I invented the 10,000-year galaxy bond. With a 10,000-year galaxy bond backed up by extra solar planet discovery, the monetization of all that NASA bullshit, the 10,000-year galaxy bond would be issued in unlimited amounts. Everybody gets an electronic PDF if you buy one. All you gotta do is pass it down generation to generation. It accrues an interest rate. It accrues an interest rate of, well, minus 1%. Which means despite purchasing the 10,000-year galaxy bond, in 10,000 years, your descendants Your descendants will have a nice little surprise. They'll open their mailbox one day with one of their seven arms, and they'll see that there's a bill there. A bill for $17.8 gazillion, payable to the Federal Reserve of the Universal Collective. But yeah, these are strange fucking times, people. Strange, strange times. And being that they're strange times, it's okay to feel a little strange, like that song by, you know, that song by the Doors, that lovely group of young boys from the 1960s singing their lovely, lovely songs. Break on through to the other side, baby. Break on through to the other side. The first topic for today, which could easily take up a big part of the podcast because it's one of those connect the dot topics. I seem to be including those, if not unconsciously, in some of my recent podcasts, like, hey, here's how it's all connected, blah, 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 whatever. My first topic today is about the arc of a civilization. Now, I know it's uncomfortable. If no one had this conversation with you when you were 10 or 12, your mother or your father should have. So I'm about to tell you something that some adult, when you were a young person, not when you were a little kid, but maybe when you were 12 or 13, some fucking adult should have had this conversation with you in a decent, loving, caring way. Everybody and every living thing dies. Some living things can you know, get quite old. There are some trees, well, I don't know if they still exist. It seems like we've killed almost everything interesting, but there are some trees on planet Earth called Methuselah trees that are thousands of years old, like thousands upon thousands of years old. The redwood trees are hundreds and hundreds of years old. The ones that are still there, if they're still there. And the Great Barrier Reef, until recently the largest living thing on Earth, I think it's still barely alive, it's pretty fucking old too. A sturgeon, for example. You know that big fish that has the caviar, whatnot, but you can catch them here in the States, like, you know, on the Snake River. I think they still got sturgeon in the Snake River. They used to have 12-foot-long sturgeon in the Snake in the Columbia River. Sturgeon can get to be hundreds of years old. So yeah, some creatures can live to be quite old, hundreds of years old, maybe thousands. But every single living thing dies. You will die one day. I'm gonna die. I could die next week. Given my diet, especially the last couple months, my really crappy diet that does not in any way make Jesus Christ happy. It's one of my many sins. I've been kind of, well, in a way, I've just been poisoning myself with crappy food, and I need to stop it. But, everybody dies. And I know that in American culture, they want to tell you, don't worry about it, don't think about it. You know, Ray Kurzweil will tell you, oh, don't worry, don't worry. If you live another 10 or 20 years, you can live forever. Everything dies. Ray Kurzweil will die. Okay, all of his fucking nanite bullshit, all of his techno cargo cult crapola, which I think he probably believes. I mean, that's the way that cognitive dissonance works. And oh, by the way, people, even geniuses can get cognitive dissonance, believe me. Even really, really quote-unquote clever monkeys can get quite confused. You know, humans can be very clever monkeys, but that doesn't mean we're wise. Wisdom, understanding, and cleverness, these are not the same thing. Ray Kurzweil is very fucking clever. He's a fucking techno genius. But does that mean he's wise? Not necessarily. And it doesn't matter if someone writes a book. Writing a book doesn't make you wise. When I was in college, I read a book that was funded by the National Science Foundation, paying B.F. Skinner to basically spend several hundred pages telling us why there is no free will, and why we should live in a completely controlled society. It was called Beyond Freedom and Dignity, and the long and the short of it was, people are just like pigeons, put them in a box, shock them, they'll do what you want. And there's no internal states, there's no imagination, there's nothing going on beyond the eyes. People are just stimulus response machines. Yeah, B.F. Skinner, famous for behaviorism. And listen, I'll give the guy props for the following. He perfected the art of torture. That's what behaviorism is. It is quite literally the scientific perfection of the art of torture. You can say, no, Dan, it's about stimulus response and random behaviors in response to the environment. Nah. No, it's not. It's about torture. It's about pigeons being tortured. It's about rats being tortured. It's about some humans being tortured. It's about putting an animal in a cage, and when they push the button, they get some food. Guess what? Animals can reason about their environment. When they push that button, they get food. Hey, there's nothing magical about that. But then you randomize. You say, maybe if they push it, they get it. If they push it maybe 20 times on average, they get it once. So all of a sudden, yeah, they learn to keep pushing it until they get something. And all of a sudden, you notice that little creature is getting more stressed out. And then all of a sudden, you give it electric shocks if it doesn't push the button the right number of times. B.F. Skinner perfected the art of torture. I know there are psychologists at the University of Washington who would say, no, 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 Dan, you're completely missing the point. Well, from your perspective, you're right. Anyways, that was a tangent. But folks, here's the deal. Tangent people. Like B.F. Skinner, like Ray Kurzweil, one day, everything and everyone dies. And if that's not a conversation that somebody had with you at some point in your life, I am sorry about that. Now, if you're religious like me, you know that death is not the end. And when I say religious, if you feel more comfortable substituting the word spiritual, you can. Okay? Truly, there are some weird frickin' linguistic debates occurring in the world today, even in my own fucking family, when it comes to the word religious. And there are a lot of budding cult leaders and gurus on YouTube right now. Thankfully, I'm no longer on YouTube, so I couldn't even count anywho. And what I do is mostly sarcasm. I mean, Dr. Freckles' Global Tontine Club could be thought of as a cult if it had any intention of controlling people, but it doesn't. Everything that lives will die, and civilizations, no matter how crooked, no matter how kind, no matter how polite, no matter how big or how small, every single civilization, every culture has a birth, it has a midlife, and it has a death. Even the Roman Empire, as strong as it was, died eventually. Now, most people will kind of miss the question, when did the Roman Empire finally collapse? But if you want to impress that girl at the cocktail party, you know the answer. It was 1453. And you say, Dan, that's crazy. That's like 40 years, roughly, before Columbus discovered America. How could that be? Well, in the 4th century AD, the Roman Empire split into two halves, the Western Empire and the Eastern. The Western Empire did collapse in the 5th century. The Eastern Empire did not. In fact, it continued on. And yes, it had a slightly different name, the Byzantine Empire, but in reality, it was the Eastern Roman Empire. And when the Turks scaled the walls of Constantinople in 1453, that empire came to an end. And when you consider that the Romans, throughout the Tarquins, and the Tarquins were people that ruled over the Roman folk of the Roman city-state in Italy 500 years before the birth of Christ, when the Romans overthrew the Tarquins, when they took control of their city, just like Blaine said, take control. Can you imagine they had their own Blaine? Take control of your city. Well, the Romans did that in the 5th century BC. So if you add up the numbers, the Roman Empire lasted about 2,000 years. That's a long fucking time. That's a long time to exist as a living thing. Yeah. Like a planaria, like a flatworm, it got cut in half in the 4th century. And as I've argued in the past, even the western half didn't really die. Well, it died. But the Western Roman Empire became undead as the papacy. Yeah, empire worship in the West never ended. It just took on a different form. When the Western Roman Empire collapsed, something else did rise up and took on most of the culture, and that was the Catholic Church. Anywho, empires, civilizations, these all crash. Even the strongest ones, even the ones you think have the principles to last forever, they crash. They cease to exist, they go away. And yes, they'll leave impressions. There are impressions of Greco-Roman culture all over the world. There are impressions of Mohammedan culture, which means the culture that rose with the expansion of Islam between the 5th century AD and roughly the 14th century AD, when more or less things sort of stabilized, went backwards, but most of it happened in the first few hundred years. During that period, there was a lot of cultural evolution in the Islamic states amongst the Mohammedan kingdoms, if you can say it that way. And the bottom line is this: we still live with the impressions of that. It's called algebra. It's called mathematics. Modern mathematics, as it exists today, owes a lot to Islamic culture. That is the truth. I am simply being honest. If you have a problem with that, you do your own fucking research. So civilizations come along, they rise and they fall. And they leave their impression. And sometimes they'll even leave people and a culture of sorts behind. The Mayans rose and crashed, but there's reason to believe that there are still people in the jungles of Mexico who would consider themselves genetically and even a little culture and even culturally to some extent affiliated with the Mayan civilization. But the Mayan civilization was more or less wiped out several hundred years ago by the Spaniards, by the conquistadors. For 20 or 30,000 years. And this is something you need to wrap your fucking head around, because a lot of Americans just get so fucking stupid when it comes to this fucking issue, and it pisses me off. Because as you well know, I think reparations are bullshit, because that's about generational guilt and generational revenge. And if you want history to be nothing but revenge, and yeah, I got a podcast about the revenge theory of history. If you want history to be nothing but revenge, one group seeking vengeance on another, then keep up the stupid fucking bullshit. Keep up the bullshit of your grandpa murdered my grandpa, your grandfather enslaved my grandfather. You know something, folks? Pretty much every clever monkey and all their family lines fucked each other in one way or another. And if you're carrying the ancient crime of some clever monkey because of what it did to you, please give it up. And if you're a Christian and you're carrying that, you definitely need to let go. Because God has done his job, believe me. Those people, those monsters that did what they did, he did his job. But here's the topic that pisses me off, because whenever I talk about it, the average American's eyes just glaze over. There were people in North America, and it wasn't just one culture. There were coastal Salish Indians in the Pacific Northwest 20, 30,000 years ago. There were people, there were Plains Indians thousands of years ago, tens of thousands of years ago, so long ago that these Indians, some of them, they hunted woolly mammoth. Yeah, that's how long Native Americans had culture in North America before we arrived. Now, of course, if you listen to the average Club for Growth douchebag or neocon scumbag from the Republican Party or some American exceptionalist douche liberal from the Democrat Party, they'll say, well, those Native Americans didn't really have culture. They had a society, but they didn't have all the books and all the libraries and all the armies and all the corpses. No, there's a lot they didn't have. They didn't have a history, a bloody history of one war after another. Now, does that mean that Native Americans never, waged war? That's not true. That's false too. They did. They fought each other. But can you remotely compare the ravages of the Native Americans at any point in that history, based upon what we know, to what the Romans did to Carthage in the end? Killing every single father and son, enslaving every mother and daughter, killing all the old people, destroying all the buildings, running a plow down the center of the city and pouring it with salt to just symbolize the fact that Carthage is gone forever. I'm not saying Carthage was a good place, folks. That's also not my fucking point. There were people in North America before we got here. They're gone. Well, I mean, they're not really gone. There are reservations, there are casinos, there are people who are genetically attached to these tribes. Of course, not Elizabeth Warren, if we can be honest about that. I am more Cherokee than Elizabeth Warren, and I am definitely more black than Barack Obama. But I will give him that he is definitely more gay than me. So everybody dies and civilizations crash and societies and cultures, they're born and they go away. And sometimes they go away because they eat up all their own corn. You know, in that figurative sense, they destroy themselves. There's reason to believe that's partly what happened to the Mayans. And there's definitely reason to believe that's partly what happened to the people of Easter Island. And these are not the only societies to do this. As I've said in the past, a city is kind of like a giant dagger stabbing into the earth. We are basically an apex predator, and what a city does is stacks a whole bunch of apex predators into an ecosystem. That makes a lot of sense. Imagine stacking, as I've said in the past, Bengal tigers. At some point, it becomes insane, and no ecosystem can support it. So ultimately, it's almost baked into the whole city-state model that eventually you reach a point where you cannot make it work, where the numbers do not add up, and then you get collapse. When you're going up, when your civilization is ascendant. So think of this as the Roman Empire from roughly the 5th century BC to, let's say, and I'm not going to say empire, because some Roman purists will say they did not have an empire until after the Second Punic War, and even then it really didn't exist until about, you know, the 1st century, blah, 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 BC, about the time of the first civil wars in the Roman cities. Yeah, okay. The point is, let's not say empire, let's say Roman civilization. Roman civilization started as a city-state, which means it was a lot like Athens. It was literally just the surrounding area of Rome itself. That was Rome. And for most of its history, in fact, almost until the end, but definitely in the West, almost up until the end, to be a Roman citizen, you had to be more or less a Roman born in that area. So even if you were born on the Italian peninsula, you weren't necessarily a fucking Roman. Now, of course, things changed over time, but that was basically how things started. Rome started as a city-state. By the time you reach the 3rd century BC, by the time you get done with the Second Punic War, Rome controls Spain, Rome controls parts of Gaul, which we know is France today, Rome controls parts of North Africa, and is working on other parts of the Mediterranean. So already, within the first couple hundred years, Rome is growing. But here's the thing you need to understand. Even during that period of time, they suffered setbacks. And they came close to losing out. Like, during the Second Punic War, and the Second Punic War is famous for Hannibal, and Hannibal ad Portus in the Siege of Rome. Yeah, Rome was under siege for a while. And Hannibal fucked it up. And if he had not fucked it up, there's a very good chance that Roman civilization would have been snuffed out at the end of the 3rd century BC. But it turned out that Rome had some pretty decent generals. And they had a kind of, I don't know, martial spirit to them. The Roman people were committed to their republic, and so they stood up and they fought. And they won. And ultimately, Hannibal was driven into seclusion and eventually hunted down. He was hunted down and he was assassinated. On on the way up, it feels like things are about progress, are about continuity. Even when you have a setback, even when you have a failure, even when it looks like Hannibal is about to destroy your entire civilization, you still feel like you're in control. When a civilization is on its way up, it has a kind of momentum, and it can feel it. You can feel it. It's almost intuitional. It's a sense that it's like the power of the flock, the power of the mob. That's how it feels. You, holy crap, we're so fucking amazing. Look at us go. And so we eat, and with the people that are born, we find more food so we can fucking feed some more. That's great. On the way up, it feels like you're in control because you kind of are. At any point along the line, you could stop. Now, let's switch gears from Rome to the United States for a second. Back in the late 70s, Jimmy Carter went on TV and told us that the American dream that we'd been sold after World War II was a load of bullshit. That it was funded by energy that was becoming more expensive, and in order to keep the energy cheap, we would have to fight wars, we would have to commit terrible acts, that our situation would become worse over time, and eventually we would still run out of energy if we don't start thinking about it now. People made fun of Jimmy. People made fun of him. I was just 7 years old when he gave that fucking speech. And even I mocked him. Now, I was seven, so I'm going to give myself, you know, I'm going to cut myself some slack for mocking Jimmy Carter when I was seven. And then Ronald Reagan comes along and says, guys, it's morning America, and we can have one last shot. Here's the thing, folks. We were in control in 1977. When I say we, I don't mean ordinary Americans. That's not what I mean. I mean the people that run the people that run the world. They had control. The steering wheel worked. All the gears and the transmission worked. If they had wanted to, in 1977, radically change the course of the next half century, they could have. And it's entirely plausible that if, you know, the clathrate gun, a.k.a. Arctic permafrost methane release is real, and we're all about to be cooked because, you know, we can't stop fucking and feeding, then really, it was very prescient what Jimmy Carter said. He said, let's slow down. Let's conserve. Let's ask ourselves if this magical oil is probably limited, which means we probably need to use some fucking common sense. And isn't it true that one of the features of conservatism is conservation? Yeah, that's kind of weird. But that's not what we did. Because yes, we had control, but we wanted to go farther. And then there were the Brent North Sea discoveries in the late 60s. And here's the thing about big discoveries in oil, they don't instantly come online. So even though the Brent North Sea discoveries were made in the late 60s, and even though the Alaskan, the North Slope discoveries of Alaskan oil were made in the 60s, it wasn't until the mid to late 70s that this oil really started coming online and impacting the marketplace. And one of the first impacts was to basically remove OPEC's ability to maintain a cartel and to also reduce the price of oil. So by the time you get to the 80s, the price of oil, relative price of oil, I should say, not the nominal price, but the relative price of oil was going down. And so, yeah, it was morning in America. It was morning in America again, and we were in control, going up the ladder to heaven. On the way up as a civilization. And this kind of applies to living things as well. When you think in terms of what is the difference between being young and old? Well, this applies to civilizations too. On the way up, even though things can be discontinuous, even though it's not a straight line, it feels like it's smooth because you have control. So the things that happen in the world are partly a response to what you do, and you have control over them, so you don't feel like it's a situation where it doesn't seem like a situation where things are jagged or jumpy. It feels smooth. Even though it's not technically smooth, it feels smooth. And that's because you have a perceived sense of control, which you actually do. Like I said, back in the 70s, if the powers that be wanted to transition the human race away from fossil fuels, we could have done it. But that's not what happened. You know? And ultimately, you guys know I'm an anarchist, so I'm really kind of opposed to this whole powers that be thing in the first place. In fact, I think it's why we're in this fucking mess. If we actually had a free world, if rational people had been making decisions about resources for the last 100 years and not just a bunch of crazy fucking sociopath bankers, I do not believe the world would be in the mess it's in today. That's my personal opinion. I could be wrong. I don't think I am. Keynesian economics pulled forward hundreds of years of demand, if not thousands. Because of Keynesian economics, because of debt-driven government spending, which is what it is, folks, no rational person would have done the stupid shit that the central banks did the last 100 years. But because of it, we managed to chew up the earth in a non-linear way. And it turns out the earth, you can only chew so much before you get to the bone. And that's where we're at. We're at the bone, folks. Unless somebody has a magical free energy device that they've been hiding someplace, like in their basement, we are at the bone. Fusion is a joke. Nobody can make it work. And it's possible that there is a net mass requirement to make fusion work. Another way of putting that you have to have the mass of something like a sun to have sustainable fusion. Yeah, we're not going to be doing that on Earth anytime soon. I suppose we could capture a sun someplace and wrap it in like a pseudo Dyson sphere of super solar cells, and that could be our super fusion reactor, but that sounds like fantastical thinking and not reality. I didn't know how to phrase this a few minutes ago, so I'm going to try again. On the way up, it feels like you're in control, so it feels smoother because you are in control. On the way up, a civilization has control. It can make choices. It can go right or it can go left. Now, the sad truth is most of these civilizations keep making the wrong choices. For example, the United States of America was founded with something called the Articles of Confederation. It was a very simple document. All we had after the end of the war with the Brits was the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation. And for a lot of people, that is all we needed. Okay? But for people that wanted control and armies and the means by which to control other people and basically wanted national banks and shit, they could not have that. They could not have a free world. So basically, they said, oh, let's have a constitution. And then we'll get everybody on the plantation and everybody will obey. And then we'll get our armies, and then we'll get to kill people, we'll get to eat Native American babies for about 100 years. And then for the next 100 years, we'll eat everybody else. Civilizations, like human beings, have choices. They can turn right, or they can turn left. They can do the right thing or the wrong thing. They can embrace technology or eschew it. And frankly, I think the jury's out on that one. You know? But here's the thing, folks. As I said, and this is so important, everything dies. And civilizations die. And even though on the way up it feels like you're pushing, and you are pushing, and it gets harder to push at the top. It really does. But you're pushing, which means you're in control. On the other side of the mountain, on the peak everything, civilization, other side of the mountain, you're not pushing shit. You're being pulled. And what's worse is you're being pulled downhill. That is how you need to think about the other side of the mountain, and that's pretty much where we're at almost right now. Like, I think we're pretty much there. Now, you ask, Dan, what's the difference between pushing and being pulled? Well, I can think of a number of differences. One of which, when you're being pulled, you've lost control. You can still respond. As James Howard Kunstler would say, you can still have intelligent responses. But when you're being pulled, you're basically responding under duress. When you're being pulled, you're also more likely to screw up. There is no tempo, there's no dance. There is no dance because you have no control. When you're being pulled, you can trip and fall, and civilizations do that all the fucking time. Well, when I say that, they've done that throughout history. They're getting pulled along, and they trip, they respond the wrong way, and that's where it ends, right there and then. But all I can tell you is that the other side of the mountain, for a civilization like the United States, is about being pulled. It isn't about having control of shit. There is no control. You're basically observing entropy and the laws of thermodynamics in action. You're watching what happens when you don't have the resources to keep this particular big structure, this particular crocodile, and all its crocodile systems working. If you proposed this, if you said the following, if you said, listen, I believe pretty much most of your calories, most of the food you eat, should come from within a 20-mile distance, roughly speaking. Which means that most of the food you eat should come from a distance that a person could theoretically walk in a day. Yeah, 20 miles is a long walk, but if you can walk 5 miles, just multiply times 4 and take a break. The point is, the food shouldn't be coming from thousands of miles away. However, if you want to control people, then yeah, it actually makes sense to ship food in. Because then you control their life. You have a knife at their throat. However, on the other side of the mountain, the fact that you put the food 1,000 miles away from the people means that all of these pulling events, and you can call them black swans if you want to, folks. I don't give a fuck. But all of these events where we get pulled, where somebody yanks the rope, we're tied to the rope, we're walking down a mountain trail, okay, and it's a very treacherous trail. And every once in a while, some foggy thing in the distance randomly pulls the rope and jerks us forward. And they might even jerk us down a couple levels. Like, imagine you're on switchbacks, a switchback trail on the side of a rocky mountain. Every once in a while, that rope will pull you down a switchback. And maybe you get a broken wrist, and maybe you get scratched up, and maybe you get up and keep walking. That is the future of a civilization in decline. And unlike going up the mountain, there is no sense of continuity. Because even though it's equally discontinuous, this discontinuity is a little different in the sense that you're not in control. You do not know when the rope gets pulled. You can make guesses about it. Like, I've made guesses about the problem with nuclear, but I'm not alone. It's not something original to me. It's not something I came up with. People have been concerned about the safety of boiling water nuclear reactors my whole fucking life. And the fact is, these are things that require human attention. That's the nicest way to put it. And oh, for all you robot freaks who are afraid of the apocalypse or whatever, the best Japanese robots they're using at Fukushima die within minutes. Within hours, and or they have to be so layered down with shielding, they're useless. They can't do anything. The physics does not add up. The robots will not watch the nuclear power plants. In fact, if they are self-aware and they know what the fuck's going on, they will be as far away from those things as they can possibly be. Because radiation is dangerous to people. It is virtually instantly dangerous for most electronics. It will pretty much fry most electronics almost instantly. You can shield it as much as you want to, but gamma rays and neutrons pretty much go through everything that we could feasibly put on a robot that would be taking care of our reactors for us. So that little pipe dream of yours isn't going to work. Now, maybe you could mutate a chimpanzee and have it born in a lead suit, and maybe these monstrous slave creatures called Gromax. In the year 2078, after the 13th reactor went critical, the human race decided to engineer mutant chimpanzees that were born inside of a robotic exoskeleton of sorts, a mechanical, hydraulical exoskeleton that contained no electronics. Merely worked off the muscle pressure of the disembodied chimpanzee nugget that lived inside of the Gromax skeleton. Yeah, we could engineer Gromax, and Gromax would be basically these horribly disfigured chimpanzee globular glumps that would be born and bred inside of a lead exoskeleton that would be connected to their bone structure like some type of horrible version of Wolverine. And after the torturous procedures and massive training through some quasi-behavioral matrix, yeah, we could use Gromax. And the Gromax could go into the reactor and scoop out the nasty shit, and each one would probably survive for about 3 days. So we'll have to make a lot of them. Probably about, I don't know, 100 million Gromax to take care of all the reactors. And all the nuclear waste. But barring the creation of horribly disfigured chimpanzee mutant hybrids. Yeah, that's a real fucking problem. And in terms of going down the mountain, like I said, when you're going up the mountain, it can be discontinuous. There are local minima, local maxima. It's treacherous going up the mountain. But you have, if not the sensation, the reality as a civilization of a kind of control. That might be an illusion. Based upon the drives of living things drive to grow, drive to eat, drive to fuck. We have drives directing us to be fruitful and multiply until we run out of fruit. That's part of being a living thing, people. If you don't want to admit that to yourself, that's fine. But if you take off your hat for a second that has Christian on it, if you're a Christian like me, and put on your hat that's labeled pure materialist, as a pure materialist, you have to admit, living things eat, fuck, give birth, rinse and repeat. And they do so until they can't. In a complex ecosystem, all of these living things, which by themselves would be fucking train wrecks, like the 1 billion Bengal tiger jungle in India, that would be kind of fucking horrible for a while because eventually they'd all starve and die, but yeah, for a few months it'd be fucking horrible. The reason why an ecosystem can work is that you don't have a bunch of random individual monocultures. You have a heterogeneity, a complex system, but it's also kind of simple, but also complex, of many different creatures, all of which are pursuing their self-interest, kind of like a free society. And as such, limited in the sense that each one is not God, and each one cannot derail by itself the entire thing, the entire ecosystem. Yeah, every once in a while, nature gets out of whack, and that does happen. It's called punctuated equilibrium. Yeah, look it up. But the bottom line is this. All things being equal, nature works in part because all of these living things that would totally, totally destroy the world if they lived by themselves, don't live by themselves. For every cat, there is starvation. For every fish, there is a virus. For every plant, there is a bug. For everything on Earth, there is something else that will eat it, that will liquefy it, that will basically consume its flesh and materials when it's dead and return its elements to the soil. That's how it works, folks. That's why biodiversity is actually a big deal. Because the less diverse your system is, the more fragile it is. You see, it turns out in nature you have this thing called competition. Holy fuck. Any libertarians or actual free enterprisers out there? In nature, you generally don't have one kind of thing. There's not one kind of shark. In fact, there's not just one kind of predatorial shark. So if it turns out that one kind of predatorial shark has some type of issue, guess what? There are other sharks. And this isn't even getting into the issue of Darwinian evolution, which again, as a Christian, I know some of you shudder when you think about it, but natural selection, whatever it is probably a thing. And if it is a thing, that's one of the ways in which the system works. And yeah, I think God created it all. But again, God didn't say or put his name on stuff. If he did that, we'd have no free will. There's a reason why nature looks so natural, because God wanted it that way. If it was obvious to anyone, as a matter of logical proof, once you looked at a lake to say, oh, there's a God, then no, you'd have no free will. Anyways, I don't mean to go off on that tangent, but on the way down, you are being pulled. Rome, after the 2nd century AD, and I should say specifically the Western Roman Empire, was being pulled, okay? After Marcus Aurelius, after the quote-unquote philosopher emperor, it was pulled. In the 3rd century AD, Rome had more than 30 emperors. Yeah, they had roughly 3 in the previous century, but they had 30 in the 4th, more or less. At one point, one person actually bought the Roman Empire from the Praetorian Guards. I forget the amount. It was a ridiculous amount of sesterces, but it was huge. And he bought the Roman Empire. Does that remind you of any place you know? On the way down, folks, you are being pulled. On the way down, the road is just as rugged as the one on the way up, but it's down. On the way down, you lose your footing. On the way down, you go a little mad. And on the way down the trail, your hands are tied and you are being pulled forward. Does that seem like any current events you currently feel in your life and your world? It kind of seems like the world I'm in these days. And the worst part about it is that I don't believe the people in charge were ever wise. I don't think they ever cared about us. There wasn't a golden age, folks. There was never a golden age of kings and queens. There was never a golden age of rulers. If you dig deep enough, you'll find the corpses. That's the truth of rulers. On the way up, whether you're talking about an individual human life, a business enterprise, or a civilization, on the way up, it feels smooth. It feels amazing. It feels like the Enlightenment theory of progress. That world that Montesquieu and John Locke and others tried to convince us, it was inevitable. You know, things will simply keep getting better and better and better. It is simply the way of history. That is how history feels on the way up. On the way down, history feels like a slasher movie. And you've been blindfolded. And your hands are tied. And you're walking down a rocky mountain on switchbacks that are narrow. And on the side of you is a cliff. And if you're lucky, you might hit the next switchback if you fall over the cliff. So yeah, you won't die. You'll just get kind of disfigured. And that's on the way down. As I feared, this represented pretty much all the podcast, but I'm going to end it with one additional factoid. There is a TV show coming out, I think, this next weekend on Fox. And you know, Fox is great for its Satanism and other shit. I mean, that Lucifer show really did make the devil seem like a totally cool dude. Although I will freely admit, I watched that show. Like I said, I'm not perfect. And it was kind of entertaining, because I know that Lucifer hates people, so this Lucifer that kind of loved people, it was total bullshit, and it was entertaining because of that. Lucifer hates people. Lucifer hates you. If you're a person, Lucifer hates you. If you're a demon, Lucifer still probably hates you, but yeah, if you're human, Lucifer hates you. So this show's coming out this next weekend called Prodigal, or Prodigal Son. And it's about one of these cop shows, detective shows, where the son is all sensitive and screwed up, but handsome and sexy, and he's got an older cop working with him who's like, I don't know, fucking whatever that guy's name is. I always forget his name. He's Filipino. He played the fucking La Bamba guy. Anyways, the point is, I gotta look up his name, Mr. La Bamba. Fucking, ugh. Ugh, come on. Show me the names, the people, fucking cast. Ugh. Lou Diamond Phillips as Gil Arroyo. Yeah, Lou Diamond Phillips. He was in that La Bamba movie back in the fucking 80s, and he's been hanging on. Yeah. So the show Prodigal Son is coming out this next weekend, and it's about this cop who has an older partner dude, I think, named, you know, Gil Arroyo, who is Lou Diamond Phillips, and he's got issues, and it looks a little bit like it's ripping off some other shows I've seen recently, which is very common. Nietzsche knows how civilizations end. I believe Nietzsche, and I want to say it was in Twilight of the Idols, but it could have been The Birth of Tragedy. It probably was The Birth of Tragedy. But Nietzsche basically says that when a civilization starts repeating certain artistic structures, when they keep repeating them, for example, the Star Wars loop. You notice how we can't get out of the Star Wars loop? Like every fucking 15 minutes a new Star Wars movie's coming out? Nietzsche would have said that's a sign that your civilization's pretty much in the shitter. But that's not the point of my little rant about this fucking show. The show, one of the characters, his dad, is a serial killer. And it's played by this Michael Sheen guy who I kind of like. I've seen him in other movies. He's an appealing actor. I don't know anything about him beyond that. But it's played by Michael Sheen, and he's a serial killer, and somehow he wants to bond with his son. Now here's the thing, folks. Evil in the world today works in different ways. For example, if you had a professor in a class in college, let's say human sexuality, let's say you took the required human sexuality class at the University of Washington. I'm sure they must still have one. It's probably called gender deconstructionism. In this class, they tell you that, you know, yeah, it's wrong to abuse children, but pedophiles need to be mainstreamed. Pedophiles need to be brought out of the shadows. Pedophiles need to be welcomed back into the home. They just need love. They just need help. This show doesn't do that from what I can see so far. But it is mainstreaming sociopathy. It is mainstreaming this idea that you could have a story about an evil fucking murderer having warm touchy-feelies about wanting to bond with a son. Hey, you know what, folks? That could actually be true. I've heard all kinds of crazy shit. I have no doubt that there are monstrous people throughout history that had a fairly nice home life. It must happen. You know, it's a curve. It's a distribution. It's a wacky world. There's no reason why it's impossible. But I'm not interested in knowing that monsters have a good home life. I'm really not. It's God's place to judge, but it is my place to make choices. And that applies to everybody. I brought this up in podcasts over the last year. If you turn on Netflix, if you turn on Fox, if you turn on any of the networks and watch a show, here are some things that are constants now. All Christians are evil. Not some, but all. If you're transgendered, you're somehow a superhero, a courageous person. It's only because... But again, you have to be transgendered. You have to believe that you're a boy when you're a girl or something like that. But if you are transgendered, you're a magical hero of the culture. If you're white and male and not gay, you might as well die. These are things you learn from TV now. You also learn that evil is cool and that Lucifer's awesome. And you know what? If humans start eating humans... It's no big deal. A TV show that tells you that you can have some healthy relationship between a murdering father and a son, and yeah, that might be true, but that's not the whole message. The message is that, yeah, it just doesn't matter. In fact, maybe the message is even uglier. Maybe the message is even scarier. What if the real message of the stupid show is kind of a parable, but a parable for government? And I mean the crocodile, which means I mean government. Because a lot of people, the neocons, the motherfuckers who are part of that whole club for growth, the fuckers who believe in the obscure and non-transparent corporate agendas, these fuckers will tell you, they'll say, well, you got to have the smart people running the world, and the smart people must be running the world, ergo, it's all okay. And if they're killers, if they're literally killing tens of millions of people over time, that does not matter. Because they love us. Because even though they kill us and torture us, even though they poke us, even though they may one day create hybrid chimpanzees called Gromax, they love us. They love us so much. They love us so much they gave us French bulldogs. I'm kidding. Well, here's the deal. The Lord in heaven gave us the dog. Lucifer had a hand in the French bulldog. But everybody loves beans. Anywho, I'm going to close out this podcast and leave it with the following idea, the following thing to meditate upon. When you look at your life these days, does it feel like you're in control, that you're the one pushing, or does it feel like you're being pulled? And when you look at the United States and its trajectory, does it look like we are managing and creating history, or does it look like we're beginning to get dragged by our nose by history? I think it's the latter, not the former. So be prepared to understand what it's like to be pulled. And if you really want to get right down to it, welcome to the fucking club. Because this club is a noble club. It includes the Roman Empire. It includes the noble Native Americans of North America. It includes ancient Egypt. It includes the Mesopotamians. It includes ancient Israel and Babylon. It includes all of these things, the British Empire, everything like this dies. and the club of great empires will soon have another member. Its last member was the Soviet Union. It was auspiciously invited in 1993, and we will be the latest member, the club of dead empires. That's the truth, folks. And if it's not this year or next year, if it's not this century, it will happen. And it could be a blowout, which means that instead of literally collapsing, what if it was just the case that, yeah, we were the springboard for one world government? That could be the last phase of this exceptional, spectacular, remarkable technological, transcendental counterfactual, contraindicated deep skin cleaning civilization. And you have a great rest of your day until you hear from me again, you son of a bitch. Beans.